From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. Do we do it in a timely manner? Not necessarily. It's Friday. We're doing the show live on our YouTube channel. A bunch of people in the chat asking if it's a little too late to recap games that happened like 3 weeks ago. But that's what we got to do. It was a big week for one of our co-hosts. Whenever you have a coaching search and firing and all that stuff, a lot's going on. So I get it. So I will give David a pass, but we didn't get to, this wasn't a timely episode on a Wednesday.
No, sir.
But that's okay. Well, hopefully you guys are still, I'm glad you guys are in the chat, sticking around and want to do stuff. That brand new computer here I got in the studio, new camera to show David. Look at that. Let's show some David on his solo shot. Look how good this man looks. It was a rough week for Mr. Woods, but if you're watching us on YouTube, yeah, we got a little new setup here. Hopefully it works okay. Had some snafus in our live show last night, but David just walks in, boom, everything's going to work.
That's right, honey.
I think it's going to work. We got a very active chat right now, which is, I think that's awesome.
We love an active chat.
David, we have an active email box, big10cast@gmail.com. We got a lot of emails to get to. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678 or tweet us at B1G Podcast. Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave us a 5-star rating for the Podcast of Champions. On Apple, you can leave us a review. And on Spotify, and David, people keep secretly telling me, hey, I listen on Spotify. You can leave us a comment on individual episodes.
I know
you don't buy it. Do we have
any? In fact, this review on iTunes, Apple iTunes.
I'm going to look at.
This review on Apple iTunes references your appreciation for Spotify. You ready?
Okay.
This is from Peter Eric D, and subject line, defies all the odds to be a great podcast. Parentheses, I tried posting this on Spotify first, but they have a 500-character limit per comment, so here I am.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. David and Ryan somehow always get it together every week to produce great shows, despite Ryan having to basically beg Dave to do some work, any work. I think the story that encapsulates this podcast best is the time 6-7 years ago when Dave explained during an off-season episode how, when he was a UCLA student, he once wrote an entire lengthy term paper on a book just by using the short Amazon book summary, all while Ryan was laughing hysterically in disbelief in the background. I can safely say I have never laughed louder when driving on the freeway. Again, as little work as possible, but they somehow put together elite and hilarious shows. Ryan and Dave, thank you for all that you do, or as little as you do, to provide surprisingly insightful shows and analysis week after week. It is one of the very few things that makes being a diehard UCLA football fan somewhat tolerable in these very dark times. Keep up the good work, and Dave, keep speaking the truth about how Jarmond royally screwed up the Chip Kelly and Deshaun Foster situations. Go Bruins and go football. Peter, UCLA class of 2016. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. So he was a little verbose, so his comment wouldn't work for Spotify. And I checked that we didn't really have any new ones on Spotify. But
correct.
We do have an active chat. I can put your questions and comments and stuff on the screen as it's coming. It's really, there's a lot of people in there. But yes, I'll try to monitor those as we're going. And then Borbo says, Spotify won't let me review the POC without listening to it on their crappy platform. Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, see, a lot of problems with Spotify, Ryan.
Well, if you listen
not
to
as many
already,
with Apple iTunes.
The iTunes isn't even a thing anymore.
You probably call it X, don't you?
No, I don't call it X. I call it Twitter.
But you are big on the marketing speak.
No, I still call it Twitter. I don't know that. I'm actually talking about, should we like verify? Like, I used to be verified. I don't want to do that anymore.
On what?
On Twitter.
Oh, you almost did it. I almost got you to do it. Almost said X. Did you see his mouth? It was set up to go eh, and then he went Twitter.
It's Twitter. I always say Twitter. Like
I'll
do it
Everyone
sometimes.
Everyone saw it.
On purpose to try to say X, but like yeah, not really. You know what's really something I do enjoy? I can say it X, I can say it Twitter. It's my bookie. You gotta
That's right,
go
baby.
Over to my bookie. You know that one guy in your group, he hits that 5-leg parlay in week 1 and the NFL. He wouldn't shut up about it for the rest of the season. You know what? That could be you. MyBookie makes it stupid easy to get in on the action. College ball, of course, Big Ten football, the NFL, Super Contest, and of course, Survivor Pools are a lot of fun. All the spreads, player props, and in-game lines you could want all under one roof. And if you're new to MyBookie, use our code POC, and any bet you choose up to 500 smackaronis is fully covered. So you make your play, and if it doesn't hit, you get it right back when you opt in using our bet back bonus token. That's promo code POC. You can get your bet back up to $500. No better time to jump in. No better place to play. Football's back. Let's make some money with MyBookie.
Hell yeah. Great read.
Thanks,
top
man.
Tier.
Do what I can. And yeah, go check it out at MyBookie, especially if you haven't done it before. That $500 bet, that's pretty cool. Like, you can make a big bet. And if you win, you win the bet, which is awesome. And if you lost, you can get it back. So check that out over at MyBookie. Grant, with the chat is very active, David. It's going to be really hard to keep up. I got this new big monitor, so I can have like a whole lot on the screen. Now it's curved.
Ryan's
is that what
so
the kids
excited.
Have?
He's so excited.
I'm such a nerd, like the engineer. iTunes review is
you
where
love
it's
how
asked.
Big and curved it is?
Wait, Natty says, I see 12 comments on the last episode on Spotify. I do love how big and curved it is. I actually have to work while he's making jokes, so I have to try to do both. I just looked at Spotify. I didn't see the comments.
It's got that nice curve to it.
There's a nice curve, yeah.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Yeah, everyone likes the curve. well, we got a lot.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go
before
ahead.
Before we really get started. I said it to you off the record, and I want to see if you remember. What was my review of the Deshaun Foster hire in February of 2024? Okay. Do you remember what I said?
I was going to bring this up. Yeah. I don't remember the exact words, but I think you talked to me offline, and then I sort of brought up what you said offline, online. And you were like, hey, maybe don't say that. But it was, I will paraphrase, it could be the worst hire in the history of head coaching hires. Is that
correct?
Fairly correct? Okay.
Correct. But it's me, so I didn't say it could be. I said it's the worst hire I've ever seen in college athletics.
Yes. Well, I mean, you were wrong.
Yeah, obviously.
Wait. Well, maybe.
Maybe not.
Not.
Maybe not.
15 games in. That was very Steve Sarkisian like.
Yeah, it certainly was.
Hey, before we got obviously the huge news with Deshaun Foster getting shit canned. Sorry, Griffin. Just let people know, because we are so late. If you are one of the few people that survived our survivor pool, because UCLA, it was like a plague just across. Just so many people are out. It was a tough one. 252 entries entered the pool. Only 46 are left. Surviving week four, there's only one. I'm sorry. Only need to select one team this week. So if you're in there, I know you had to do two, and two. And most of us, a lot of us, survived two, and then we got five right, but the sixth one we got wrong because we sort of figured this is the only week we could pick UCLA. Let's go for it. Obviously, that didn't work out. So a lot of people are doo-doo. So we have. There's 219 picks that were correct, 129 losers, and 127 of them picked UCLA. One had Minnesota, one had Purdue. So go in there. I tweeted out the picks link. It's out there, you know, wherever you can find it, it's out there. So if you're one of those 46 people, make sure you make your pick because it is Friday and we want to get to the games and everything. Matthew wants to stress, please don't send a pick in if this is your first week or if you lost, if you picked UCLA. He just has to go through all that stuff. And I know he's a Stanford guy and he's smart, but just don't put a pick in unless you're one of the 46 people that survived. And if you did, don't not do a pick because you did all the work of not picking UCLA. 3 weeks in a row, you could have picked UCLA. You didn't pick them any of the times. You survived. Now move on and make your picks. Only one pick this week. So sorry, I just wanted to do that public service.
Thank you.
Announcement, David, because we are late, so I wanted to make sure.
I love it.
Where I got going there. But yeah, so we have like... do I have that on here? Oh, it's over here. Breaking news that
6 days old or 5 days old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's breaking, like as we're speaking. He head coach of a school that is in Los Angeles.
We are still clear. It is in Los Angeles.
It is Los Angeles.
Deshaun Foster fired officially on Sunday. Fired for all intents and purposes while losing to New Mexico 35-10 at home, which we'll get to in a little bit. He went 5-10 through 15 games. Obviously didn't have the chops for the role, struggled in a lot of areas of the job, and never should have been hired, and that's where every bit of focus should be right now. Why was he hired? Who did that? And making sure that doesn't happen again. Martin Jarman hired him in February of 2024. I've done the Chip Kelly timeline to death, but he was in position to hire in February 2024 because of his own failures as an athletic director. And then he went and he hired the worst available option of all of the available realistic options in February of 2024. So it's a double deducto, as my high school history teacher used to say. It's unprecedented for UCLA to fire this early in a season, barring a scandal. The only scandal about Deshaun Foster's tenure is that it happened at all. And it's unfortunate, I think, that for many fans, Deshaun Foster will now be associated with this instead of being a very good running back for the Bruins. And that's another thing that you can pin on this administration for forcing you to think. But yeah, extremely disappointing era. Maybe the most embarrassing start to a season I've seen. And UCLA has had some embarrassing starts to a season. And they did the right thing in firing him now. I don't want to make that unclear. But now the question is, who is going to make the next hire? And I think that's the question on every UCLA fan's mind. And for now, Martin Jarman is still the athletic director. Now, we've heard maybe he won't be the one making the hire. But as long as he is the athletic director, I have a hard time believing that he's not going to have a role. Yeah, that's where things stand right now.
So it was a busy week for you.
Busy week.
Yeah.
Busy week.
Well, this might help a little bit.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Super chat. Alan, to adequately honor his memory, here's a dollar for each win of Deshaun Foster's vaunted tenure. Congrats, Dave.
Appreciate you, Alan. You're the man.
Unfortunately, iTunes takes like 33% or Google or whatever we're on.
Whatever we're on.
Yeah. Good summary there. Pretty insane for that to happen. And you saw Virginia Tech do the same thing. But I agree. It's like the right. It's the right move.
When a thing is failed, and obviously failed, the right move is always to move on immediately. It's never the right move to stick around with something that is failed. That they did this right now, because I think Martin Jarman was also a motivated part of this. I don't think he was the only decision maker, but I think he was also a motivated partner in the firing, is, I think, to some extent, self-preservation for him.
Yes. He had that like committee is like, hey, we're going to all hire together. It's like, you're the AD, hire the guy, you know, like that's your job.
Yeah.
Not committee and like put it on, you know, for everybody.
Well, yeah. And so I think the next 2 months at UCLA are, not to like overblow it too much, but I think they are 2 to 3 of the most important months in UCLA athletics history. Cause this is going to determine, are you institutionally committed to this or not? And if certain things don't happen, if, for example, Martin Jarman ends up making the hire, and if, for example, he's allowed to still be the front-facing representative of the athletic department, I think that will speak to a lack of institutional commitment to football. Because no institutionally committed program would let him ever make another hire. I'm not being facetious, and I'm not making this about anything personal. This is just a professional assessment of the job he has done. It has been a massive failure and massively poor stewardship of the program. So you can't let him first make the hire. But I also I would be baffled by a situation if I was a head coach who UCLA is interviewing, who if you're trying to hire a boss, like if you're trying to hire somebody who's really good, you're not interviewing them. They're interviewing you.
Yeah.
And they want to know everything about your structure, everything about your leadership, everything about what makes you tick institutionally. So if you're a head coach, say you are, God, I don't know, say it's one of the sitting Big Ten head coaches that they've been rumored or that we know that they would be interested in, Jed Fish, Jonathan Smith, right? What's the first question you ask when you're being hired for any job? Who do I report to?
Yeah.
Okay. They might say, oh, well, there's going to be a football GM or there's going to be a football only AD and you're going to report to them and it's going to go straight to the top to Chancellor's office. Oh, okay. Who's this guy? Pointing at Martin Jarman.
Yeah.
Oh, he's the athletic director. He's in charge of all the other stuff. Oh, why isn't he in charge of football? Oh, because he failed in X, Y, and Z areas. Oh, why didn't you fire him?
Yeah.
That's why I think you get into a little bit of eight-dimensional chess at some point if that actually is the strategy. So I'm interested to see how the next 2.5 months go. Because UCLA won't be making a hire until the end of November at the earliest. That's when the regular season ends for college football. And there's nobody who's going to be announced as a hire before then.
Ed Orgeron?
Well, I guess if they make the second worst hire in football history, I guess they could do that.
He won a freaking national championship.
I guess they could do that soon.
He won a national championship. But you could do worse.
But you know what I mean? Like, in reality, they're not making a hire for 2.5 months. So I think the next 2.5 months, it's put up or shut up time for UCLA. And maybe that time has already passed. But I think donors, everyone, like, let's see how much alignment there actually is institutionally to making this a serious operation, because it hasn't been.
Yeah. And you have to, I saw this at USC. It wasn't just about hiring a coach. It was I think the LA schools, even though one's public, one's private, there was a lot of similarities with, hey, this is just the way we've always done things. And maybe USC took football like more seriously, but still they were screwing around a lot too. And it took
iterations of ADs to
come in and go like, you guys are doing this way wrong.
The thing that people miss is how institutionally similar USC and UCLA are. It's just USC has more history with it. And so it'll never allow it to get to it.
They allowed it to get pretty bad.
There are too many people in the donor and fan community with too much power to let it get to the rock bottom stage. Like, rock bottom for USC was what, going 5-7?
4-8.
It's like the same thing for UCLA basketball. There are too many people invested in it to ever let it get horrible. They might go under 500 a couple of years, but they're never going to be like 6-28 or whatever. Maybe they have. I don't know. But it's never going to be that consistently, I guess, is my point. You'll have one of those bad years and then, oh, yeah, everyone's fired. USC football is the same way. But institutionally, it's a lot of, well, we're in L.A. We're naturally advantaged. We don't really need to do that because, people should want to come here. People should want to coach here and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, to some extent, if everything else is equal, but if you make it so that everything else is not equal – and you're actually running behind in X, Y, and Z areas, no one's going to come here.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the Athletic put that story out, and like 2 years ago.
Can you talk to your friend, Bruce, carrying water for Chip Kelly and Martin Jarman and tell him to stop?
I have talked to Bruce about this, but the story was interesting. But
even in that story, he's carrying water for Chip Kelly.
I don't know. I read it like, there's some issues that Chip Kelly had too, but I would say when UCLA beat USC, what is it, 2 years ago, I think the quote, like, he talked to different sources there, that UCLA's roster was like $400,000 and USC's was
but
like
even
$12
that
million.
Isn't true. Like, even true. That isn't true. Like, I guess he might have meant literally on the field, but UCLA was, I can't get into the dollar figures actually.
Okay.
Let's just say at least one player was making way more than the $400,000.
Okay.
Like, that is its spin from Chip Kelly, is a lot of this stuff that they lost so many players to the transfer portal. No, they didn't. Like, not until he was dead man walking after 2023 did they lose a single starter to the transfer portal. Like, they were transfer portal net positive. They got Zach Charbonnet in the transfer portal.
Oh, yeah, he's good.
Like, they got dudes in the transfer portal. Like, they were doing really well in the transfer portal. And then Chip Kelly was dead man walking coming out of 2023, so they finally lost starters. But saying Kamari Ramsey left for money, if UCLA had still been viable, Like, if not everyone had thought Chip Kelly should be fired and is leaving, and if Danton Lynn had actually been given a credible offer by a sitting head coach who had, like, still viability as the head coach there, Kamari Ramsey probably stays a Bruin. I mean, it's just there are problems with UCLA, but what Bruce lands on because of, I think, obviously the relationship with Chip and Chip providing him information, is he lands on this idea that it's a problem institutionally and that nothing was caused by a coach. But Chip Kelly, the damage he specifically did to the program by not raising institutional funds and then by coaching the team into the ground year after year and not recruiting, those were all own goals by him. Those were not things that were necessitated by financial commitment. There was enough financial commitment even during that period to recruit as a top 25, top 20 program, because NIL really didn't become a thing until the very back end of his career at UCLA. So it's just, he posts these non sequiturs, and it's just, he also said Chip Kelly didn't have financial commitment in a previous story right after Deshaun Foster. And the reality is, Chip Kelly had $5 million for food. He had a ton of financial commitment. There was a ton of financial commitment. The story of UCLA is this. They were uncommitted to football. Durrell, Neuheisel. Mora, they started to get a little serious with that hire because he presented a real plan, and they're like, okay, let's try. They still didn't pay him a whole lot. He won, and then he was able to make demands, and he made demands, and because he was winning and exciting people, those demands were met. UCLA got serious. The whole thing was in 2013-14, they got serious. They built a new facility that everyone said is state-of-the-art. It's the best facility we've seen, yada, 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 right? They did all of that, and then they hired Chip Kelly, which was another signal. UCLA is serious. They gave Chip Kelly everything he wanted. Every demand he asked for, they gave him, and he fell flat on his face. And then what UCLA did is it turtled, and that's the reality. That's what happened. And Martin Jarman came in, and he has no perspective on UCLA as a historical entity. He thinks the fans should be happy with being an average 6-6 program, which it is right now. Even they're 58-63 over the last 10 years. He thought, oh, well, they should be happy with that because that's the level. Well, UCLA's been hemorrhaging fans for the last 10 years, so that's not the level. That's not the maintenance level of this program.
Yes.
And if you look historically, that's not the maintenance level of the program. The maintenance level is about an average 7-win team, which is worlds different. Worlds. Because 7-5, 8-4, what that equals to on an average is sometimes you go 10-2, sometimes you go 6-6,
yeah.
But you're middling at 7-5, 8-4. 7-5, 8-4 is not the best season,
yeah.
Which it basically was under Chip Kelly. So Martin Jarman had bad perspective on this stuff. He didn't have any kind of historical narrative, and he came in at a time where UCLA was turtling because of its commitments to Chip Kelly.
All right, we got a super chat. More into the UCLA coaching hire fund. Preach, Dave, from Colt. The national narrative needs to be corrected. Keep it mediocre, which even UCLA can't do this year.
That's right, baby.
I am excited for to do 0-12 watch. Like, that's one of the coolest things ever.
Yeah, I mean, we got to get through Northwestern. But, like, at this point, UCLA fans, I know. I get it. I've said this before for other schools, so I need to say it now. 0-12 is much cooler than 2-10.
Way cooler.
It's way cooler to go 0-12 because it's like, oh, wow.
Like, you can't, like, well, it was just a bad, no. Like,
and I will say this, embarrassment is the only thing that ever seems to rock UCLA. It's the only thing that ever seems to put people off their pedestal a little bit and make them do stuff. New Mexico was embarrassing. We still haven't even talked about any of the games. New Mexico was embarrassing. Going 0-12, continuing to look this bad. I know it's not going to be pinned on a coach anymore.
Yeah.
But continuing to look embarrassing perhaps continues to activate this administration to do something.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to get into our roundup and everything. Did you look? I put the power rankings in. I just took
I didn't look at them. Okay. I think they're great.
Well, yeah. Let me know if you find any issues with them. But we're going to go through these quick because these games, like I said, happened 3.5 weeks ago. But number 18 might shock you that this is. No, it's not going to shock you.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
We don't need to belabor the game. I just want to cite one thing. If you needed any further rationale for why Deshaun Foster was never cut out to be the head coach, just watch the last 2 minutes of the first half. It was the most abysmal clock management I think I've ever seen in my entire life. New Mexico had the ball. I want to say it was inside the UCLA 10. It was at the 3. And they had a yard to go, I think, for a first down. And then they would potentially score. UCLA had all three of its timeouts. It was under the 2-minute warning. And they allowed New Mexico to bleed off another 40 seconds from the clock. And this was when the game was still viable. It was, I think it was 7-7 at that time, if I'm not mistaken. So it was New Mexico driving to go ahead by a touchdown. Now, ideally, what you would want is a tie going into halftime. So UCLA should be trying to save as much time as possible. Inexplicably, UCLA doesn't call a timeout, allows New Mexico to drain the clock all the way to, I think, about 1 minute, 16 seconds, and then they score the touchdown. So they've only got a minute, more or less, to go down the field and score on their own drive. I'm completely mistaken, because they actually did end up stopping them. Let me,
David.
You know,
we're talking about this doesn't matter.
I want to get it right. So yeah, they turned it over on downs. This is my bad. They turned it over on downs at the UCLA 3. So, but they'd allowed them to drain the clock to 1:09. UCLA has the ball now. They're still down by 7. They have the ball. They need to drive 97 yards with 1:09 to go. But they still have timeouts, so they can if they want to. They run the ball on first down. They get nothing. Right. So at that point, you're like, okay, they're packing it in. Okay, that's a defensible choice. They didn't think they were going to drive down the field in a minute.
Sure.
Okay. On the next play, they run it again for 9 yards. They call timeout. It's now 3rd and 1 on their own, what would that be? 12. So they've called the timeout now with about 30 seconds left in the half. All you're doing at that point is preserving a chance for New Mexico, because you're probably not scoring. But then they continue to go on this drive, and they mismanage the clock so badly that they're at midfield. They have about 4 seconds left. They throw an out to the sideline to what we're all thinking, oh, they're trying to get a more manageable field goal, maybe get it to like 65 yards and then try to kick a field goal. Weird, but okay. They throw this out to the sideline. They have to review it to make sure there was time still on the clock, and then they run the ball, ending the half. Mm. It was insane.
Yes. So was your rant about the halftime. Like, the guy got fired. Like, we know.
No.
Everyone's agreeing with me in the comments. Like, this is a waste of time.
Whatever.
We do have.
Whatever.
Yes, it was a waste. That was a waste of time. We will not get those seconds back in our lives. Eddie, Jeff is feeling so bad about UCLA that he is wearing USC colors today. Oh. Thanks for the super chat. Is Jeff wearing UCLA colors? I don't know. I can't tell.
I'm wearing a maroon shirt.
Oh, Jeff, you. Okay.
Yeah, yes, I'm
sorry.
Jeff.
I'm
Jeff.
There's a lot going on here. Real quick before we...
No more real quicks. What are we doing?
I'm trying real quick. You're the one that's giving why they bungled the end of the first half. They got blown out by New Mexico. We both went 5-4 last week. We had 4 picks different and we split them all. So overall, I am 21-16 against the spread. David's 20-17, so I'm still one game ahead. But we did pretty good last week, and we both got this New Mexico one right. This was the easiest.
Obviously.
The easiest one. Next up, number 17.
Northwestern Wildcats.
This was a disappointing result.
I'm sorry.
Right, go ahead.
Because they played somebody.
Yeah.
Oregon Ducks.
Number 2.
The reason this was disappointing, of course, is because Northwestern poured on 14 junk time points to cover.
Yeah.
And we both had Oregon.
I think Oregon had turnovers in side the 5 or something too. I don't even remember. This was a while ago.
It doesn't matter. It was 34-0 and then it was suddenly 34-14, and I'm wondering where all our money went.
Yeah, we were covering. And it should have been worse, early on. But
yeah, I mean, Northwestern has a get-right game next week against UCLA. Oregon's pretty good. This was not dominant Oregon. I think in the first half they were scuffling a lot. But I think Dante Moore has looked pretty good for Will Stein and company. And that run game has been solid. So they took care of business. Again, they should have covered. They just didn't.
Yeah, that was a disappointing one. I didn't like that on Saturday morning. Okay, number 16.
Wisconsin Badgers.
Speaking of disappointing.
Yeah, super disappointing. Wisconsin went down to Tuscaloosa and basically got their butts handed to them. Alabama's defense looked a little bit more like an Alabama defense in this one. Made, you know, Danny O'Neill look very mediocre and more or less stifled that Wisconsin running game. And then, I mean, offensively, Alabama looked pretty good, too. Wisconsin did not look like they belonged on the same field, which is really disappointing, I think, for fans in Luke Fickell's. What are we in now? Third year?
I think so, yeah. Is it third or fourth? It might be fourth.
Might be fourth.
Yeah. That was not that was no bueno. It was a like kind of blowing them out early and then tried to get a little bit of comeback. And
third.
It didn't work.
Third year.
Okay. We have number 15.
Purdue Boilermakers.
And they were hosting number 6.
USC Trojans.
Whenever there's an insane delay like this, I usually just kind of like chalk up the results as like just some weirdness.
It was one of the weirdest things I've seen, being in the press box and 3 hours for lightning delayed.
I will say Purdue looked frisky.
I think they're pretty good.
Like, I think they're solid.
Barry Odom's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, Ryan Brown threw 3 interceptions, and I think, you know,
they moved the ball.
Yeah, you changed those decisions just a little bit, and this is a game going into the
Purdue's drives. They limited the possessions, so they kept it closer. We both got this one right. We took Purdue in the 20.5. They won. You know, USC won by 16, but their average drive was 8 plays and 45 yards. So like they moved the ball. USC just got the big plays.
Yeah,
they got a lot of tackles for loss, but they 2 interceptions that were going to be scores. And then a 300 that I think it might be the largest human being. It's certainly the ever scored in USC history. Jamal Jarrett.
Yeah.
360 pounds, 70 yard pick six. I mean, he's in the conversation for the biggest human being to ever score in college football, I would think.
I would imagine.
Like, there's not a lot of guys bigger than him anyway. And for him to score, especially from 70 yards, I don't think that's ever happened.
No, probably not. Big fast guy. Big fast guy.
He wasn't that fast, but
Hey, look, man.
He covered 70 yards.
Long strider.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think USC looked, if you contextualize it as thinking that Purdue is pretty solid, USC looked good. I think solid. Jaden Maiava, I think, did enough. I don't think he was spectacular, but he was fine. I kind of with you. I think Purdue, they'll win a couple of Big Ten games this year.
They have Notre Dame this weekend. I'm curious to see if they can keep that one close. Number 14. I don't know if this is a little low, but we'll see.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Are you only saying that because their junior college quarterback looked like passable against an FCS or not even FCS? They're not FCS anymore, are they? They're up to FBS, aren't they? UMass. I think they're at the lower end of FBS now.
I think so, yeah.
They should be an FCS program because, good God, they look horrible.
I did get this one right, so I was happy about that.
Oh, that's the only reason you want to elevate them. Yeah.
No, I did. Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Anyway, they blew out Massachusetts 47-7.
So that one, let people know, like, I got that one right, you got that one wrong. Purdue, we both got it right. We both got Wisconsin wrong. We both got Oregon wrong. Okay, next up, we got number 13.
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap. Yeah, they beat something called Towson. I don't care.
We didn't have a line on this, right?
Yeah, 44-17.
Number 12.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
I should have dropped them more.
You should also play another sound.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Because they were taking on...
California Golden Bears.
What did the sturdy Golden Bear do?
They sturdied the hell out of that game.
Did they cover the 1.5 that they were dogs by? Did they lose by 1?
No. They like blew them
out.
Damn
right. 1 by 13. Hell yeah. Go Bears.
This was late. I didn't get back to our Airbnb outside of Indianapolis till like 2 in the morning, but this was, we were watching, this was still on, like we were watching this. Crazy.
Who's getting JKS in the transfer portal? That's the real question.
That's all anyone's talking about. He looks like
He looks Indiana, like a freak show.
Hey, we give Indiana our quarterback. We're cool. We like our freshman from Cal. But
yeah
Minnesota did not look good from home.
No. Offense, not great. And defense, meh, but offense, not great.
Hold on. Okay, well, there was the screen was screwed up because I had to go back and forth. Okay, number 11, we've got
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
That one always gets me. Who the heck were they playing?
It was FCS.
Oh, I don't care. Youngstown State. Oh, they only won 41-24. Was borderline. I do care.
It was a 10-point game in the fourth quarter. That's not, they're undefeated. Only one turnover so far for Aiden Childs.
And was his first.
Yeah, it was like a tip pass or something. There was another one he should have had tipped. I mean, he should have had picked, but that's not, you don't want a 10-point game. Against an
the
FCS
Youngstown
school.
State Penguins?
The Penguins, yes. How's the Penguin go?
Meh. I don't know.
Yeah. This is concerning. Like 3-0 is great, but I don't know. We'll see this weekend. But anyway, number 10.
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Wow. Scratch, 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 scratch.
Wow, poor directional Michigan. Michigan won 63-3 over Central Michigan. They allowed 60 total passing yards. 6-0.
This was a great cover.
On 20 attempts. Yeah. They won by 60.
Yes. Who did you have in this one?
I'm not here to talk about the past. I'm here to have eyes forward on the future.
You have Central Michigan. So
that seems unlikely.
Say I gave you an extra 4 touchdowns, you still wouldn't have covered.
That's Michigan was favored by 28.5. They won by 60. Bryce Underwood looked really good. He can run and he can also throw.
I guess it could have moved them up a little, but I don't know. I did this like
Michigan had just over 6 times as many rushing yards as Central Michigan had passing.
Wow.
So Central Michigan had 60. Michigan had 381 rushing yards.
Yeah, I think the concern with Michigan is they can do this to
bad teams.
Bad teams.
But can they beat good teams?
Yes. Can they, when you can just run all over somebody, yes, that's fine. But I think it's different. We saw the Oklahoma game. It just didn't. Now, they could be a better team now, but I think there's a concern. There's some schools, there's some programs that are like, we can beat the crap out of less talented teams, but when you're someone that's similar, all that stuff doesn't work.
Yeah.
So that's my big concern there. We'll see in the games coming up. Number 9.
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
Beat Norfolk State by 50. Who cares?
Yeah, we didn't have that picked. Number 8.
Washington Huskies.
Who are they playing?
I don't know. Do we have that game?
I don't think there was a game.
Did they not have it? Oh, did they have a bye?
They must have.
Ah, perfect. Okay.
Did we not? We didn't note that last week, did we?
We did not, no. Huh. Well, I wonder who puts that in the...
Listen, man.
Let us know.
They had a bye.
They had a bye.
Or maybe they didn't. Who knows?
Well, if they didn't, or they played someone crappy, we didn't pick it. So it didn't happen. It didn't happen on the Podcast of Champions. Number 7.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
They beat something called Houston Christian by 52. Who cares?
Yeah, that, but did they cover? No, there was no cover.
There
was
no line.
This one. Okay, 6, we already had USC. Number 5.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
They beat the hell out of Larry Bird, 73-0. Who cares?
Yeah, no, there was no line on this one, right?
Fernando Mendoza threw one incomplete pass.
Pretty impressive. Number 4.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
Directional Michigan had a really bad day on Saturday.
It wasn't good for Directional Michigan.
No. Illinois won 38-0 over Western Michigan. Luke Altmyer continues to look like, I'm going to say, best quarterback in the Big Ten or in the conversation at the very least. But yeah, he's solid, and Illinois' defense made Western Michigan upset.
Who did we get this pick right? We did. We both got it right.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
Well, you can look at the document now. You're able to.
I'm trying to do a little more, but you know, this was, we're gonna like delegate some work, but it's all back to me. But that's, yes, we both got this one right. 27 and a half points, and Illinois covered that one. All right, number three.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. They beat Villanova 52-6. Who cares? But also, is Drew Aller good?
It's a good question.
Okay.
I was never a huge, huge fan, but just when you get a returning starter and stuff, but like, you know, we'll see. With the big games, it'll matter.
Just a thought. Just something to think about.
We already talked about number two, Oregon, and then we have still number one.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
This football game was the most important game of the weekend to me.
It was.
The battle for Ohio.
Yes. This one sucked.
Ohio State, they hosted the Ohio University Bobcats. And you know what? Those Bobcats didn't go away easy.
Nope.
Ohio State scored 37 points. But do you know how many they allowed to the Ohio Bobcats? The Ohio University Bobcats? They allowed nine.
Nine, okay.
And you know what that was?
Cover.
Just enough to cover, baby. Yeah.
Was that a half point one? It was a really tough one. Like,
it was 28. It was the margin and 30 and a half.
Yeah.
So that's right, baby. That's called knowledge. That's called, you know, like I like to think of myself as prescient in some ways. This was an obvious one to me.
Was this the one where, like, Ohio State like muffed a punt like before half or something? I forget what it was.
Ryan,
they gave
up
like a really weird touchdown that was
I'm not here to talk about the details.
I believe that's what it was. Like they had a punt blocked or I think they had a punt blocked. Maybe.
You want
that might have been a different game.
You just want to explain away all of your problems. And I just want to say, you know, one of these schools should get the definite article in front of their university, and it is
not the
Ohio State University. It is the Is it Ohio University or University of Ohio?
I think it's Ohio University.
The Ohio University Bobcats.
I think it is. I don't know. I might be wrong. My apologies to the Bobcats. Yeah, that was a tough one.
Tough one for you.
I should have dropped Ohio State for that one too. Cool. All right. Well, let's look at the games this weekend. Thankfully, we've got a lot of conference games, so there won't be 57 to cover. We won't even notice if someone's on a bye because
who cares?
There's just so many. So let's start off on Friday. We have
Iowa Hawkeyes.
They're on the road taking on
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
5 p.m. on Big Fox later today in
Literally
4 hours and 15 minutes.
Yes.
Iowa traveling to Rutgers. Rutgers is a 1.5-point dog. I think both of these teams may be bad.
Yes.
And when you're faced with two bad teams doing bad team things, my inclination is to take the home team.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to fight that right now. Maybe I will later on in the season when we determine who's worse than who. But right now I'm categorizing them both in the poop pile.
Yes.
Maybe one of them emerges, maybe one of them sinks lower, but right now they're just both in there. I'll take Rutgers at home just because they're the home team.
I'm going to do the same. I'm not convinced that the Iowa offense is good just because they put up a bunch of points and it was a glorious cover. I loved it, but this is going to be a road game. You know, Rutgers can be feisty. I think, you know, getting a point and a half and the home field advantage, I'm going to take Rutgers as well. I think Bill Connolly, I looked at his numbers, and they had Rutgers actually as a favorite. So, it's a home team. I'm not buying the Iowa situation yet. So I will go with the Scarlet Knights as well. Tony in the chat says, Rutgers QB is really slinging it. So
no, he's not.
You know,
stop it, Tony.
Compared to
get some help.
What I was doing, yes. Okay, so that's our Friday game that's happening very, very soon. Next up, we've got. Oh God, I got to do this too. We have
Oregon State Beavers.
Wrong. Wrong. That's not the next game.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, too bad we're doing it. Okay. Okay, fine. We'll do that one in a second. We have
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap, 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 snap.
At
Wisconsin Badgers.
The only 9 a.m. game on Saturday.
Only one?
Boy, howdy.
Not five?
I know, crazy. 9 a.m. on...
Five 9 a.m. games on, like, happened more than once.
On NBC.
What are we doing? Should we have a conference that's on the West Coast?
Maryland.
Five 9 a.m. games.
Traveling to Wisconsin.
Yes.
Wisconsin's a 9.5-point home favorite. Wisconsin did not look good at Alabama last weekend. This isn't Alabama that they're hosting at home. However, Maryland has looked frisky. New quarterback, Malik Washington, not a bad player. I'm not sold on Wisconsin's own quarterback situation with Danny O'Neill.
What's his name? The guy that came from Maryland.
Is Billy Edwards back?
I think he might be back. He's potentially back.
Okay, well, I'm definitely not sold on Danny O'Neill, and I'm not sold on quarterback coming back from injury. So,
do we know in the chat? Like, let us know if he's coming back.
Look, let me Google this real quick. We're a good show. We do our homework.
Yeah.
Billy Edwards is...
I think he's questionable, but...
Questionable. Seems like it could happen. Might be coach's decision is what I'm reading here. Anyway, he's fine. Anyway, my point is, I think Maryland looks friskier.
Okay.
So, 9.5 points is a lot.
It's a lot.
And I don't think Maryland, so speaking of teams that are in the poop pile, I'm more inclined to say maybe Wisconsin is teetering on the brink of the poop pile right now based on what we've seen than Maryland.
Yes.
So I'm going Maryland here, plus 9.5.
I'm with you too. I wrote these two down before. I did a little research and I was like, I feel like this is the way to go. I'm going to take the points here. Wisconsin doesn't impress me. For them to be a 9.5-point favorite to freaking anyway, I don't even like UCLA. Maybe that. But outside of that, I'm not taking Wisconsin as a 9.5-point favorite against anybody. So, yes, I'll go with Maryland as well until Wisconsin proves me wrong. Next up.
Oregon State Beavers.
Going into Eugene to take on.
Oregon Ducks.
12 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. Oregon State traveling to number 6, Oregon. Oregon is a 34.5-point favorite. Let's check in on Oregon State. How have they been doing so far this year?
We haven't paid a lot of attention to them since we don't cover that program anymore. I'm sure they're good. Like, I remember like the defense was always good and like they, you know.
Oh, dear. they lost to Cal at home, 34-15.
Okay.
They lost to Fresno State at home, 36-27, and they got pantsed by Texas Tech on the road, 45-14.
Okay.
That program may be deceased.
Yeah. Sorry, Angie.
Sorry, Angie. Give me the Ducks.
Duckies. Yeah, going Ducks.
Because also, I think Dan Lanning is always motivated in this game to go ham.
This is when he's motivated, you know, there's... If they could play with their food. They did last week against Northwestern or whatever. That was on the road. This is sort of like statement when Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy, like, he just put a pasting on them. I'm feeling this is more in the pasting category.
They won by 35 last year at Oregon State.
Yeah, so this will be worse. Oregon State's worse. I think Oregon's going to pace them. The only thing that would be concerning, because we do know Phil Knight does support Oregon State as well. If he was like, look, guys, beat them, but don't embarrass them.
Yeah.
So maybe Phil Knight would come to the rescue and tell them to call off the Dogs or the Ducks. But I don't think that's going to happen. All right. One of the best games potentially of the weekend.
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Scratch, 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 scratch.
On the road, taking on
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
12:30 p.m. on CBS. Number 21, Michigan, traveling to Nebraska. Nebraska's a 1.5-point home dog. This really comes down to how much do you buy Nebraska at this point? And do you think Michigan can beat a solid team? Because right now, They beat New Mexico at home, and obviously we know New Mexico's a juggernaut. They could be a playoff team, so I guess that answers our question. But they lost on the road at Oklahoma by 11 and did not look good offensively in that game.
No.
Nebraska's been pretty good defensively so far this year. They've held Cincinnati to 17, Akron to 0, and Houston Christian to 7. Obviously, they haven't been challenged, but they've looked pretty good.
Yeah.
So
they certainly have a pulse.
They certainly have a pulse. And so it just, do you buy Michigan? Like, do you buy them as a good team that can beat other good teams on the road? I just haven't seen it yet. They've got a lot of talent. I'm not saying they can't win, but this is, again, two teams where I think if you throw out the name brands or what they've done recently, I don't have them very different.
Yeah.
So give me Nebraska.
It bothers me that I'm going to agree with you, but yeah, I am too. Like, again, do I want to be Michigan? Like, yeah, they have the 21 next to their name, mostly because it's Michigan. I think Nebraska has looked better from what I saw. Now, they haven't played the same kind of schedule. You know, it's tough to go in Oklahoma and play, and John Mateer was awesome. I don't think Dylan Raiola is going to, you know, be John Mateer maybe, but like this is, I think this is a team that's going to be a really tough out. And to ask Michigan to go on the road and perform well when we saw, you know, the freshman quarterback and a lot of lumps. And we saw some of those with Raiola when he was a freshman. So, yeah, I'll take Nebraska getting a point and a half at home. It's very similar to like Rutgers and Iowa. Like, you know,
not two bad teams. I think these are two decent to good
these
teams.
These are better teams, but
same kind of level.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and James says, I want to see Raiola win a big game. And I think that's fair. You know, this is going to be a big one. Like, you could see if, you know, Michigan doesn't play well, but Nebraska sort of like is screwing up all over the place because they don't know what to do in a big game. I get it, you know. So, yes. But I'm going to go with Nebraska at this one as well and see what happens. All right. Next up, we've got
Purdue Boilermakers.
They 12:30 p.m. NBC. Purdue traveling to number 24 Notre Dame. Give me my pot of gold. That's not really Irish, but whatever. Notre Dame's a 25.5 point favorite. First, just give me Purdue, no doubt.
I took that like
Purdue could win this game.
Yeah.
Notre Dame right now is 0-2. I don't know if anyone notices that because they're ranked still.
Yeah.
But they lost at Miami, and they lost to Texas A&M. The big thing isn't that they lost those games because they lost them by a combined 4 points. The big thing is their defense doesn't look good. Hasn't looked good through two games. And Purdue's offense looks frisky. If they make slightly better decisions at quarterback, it'll look a little bit more than frisky. Not quite an Indiana 2024 thing going on, but definitely a resurgence offensively. Purdue plus 25.5, no doubt.
A zillion percent. Like, there's just no question whatsoever. Could Notre Dame put it together and blow them out at home? Certainly. But, like, have it won a game, you know? I'm not – and they've given up yards and points and, you know, Purdue looks like a way better team. This is like a line that you would have last year. I don't get this line, but give me Purdue all day. And that's one of the easiest picks of the week, I would say.
Yep.
All right. This is a big, 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 big one.
This is an interesting one.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
On the road at
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
This is 4:30 p.m. on NBC. Number 9, Illinois, traveling to number 19, Indiana. Indiana's a 6.5-point favorite, and I've now checked that line several times to make sure it's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because that feels crazy to me.
It does.
Yeah, because again, speaking of like the leveling thing, these two teams are on the same level to me. Illinois looked really good this year. I mean, I know like the Duke game was weird, and probably shouldn't have been that final margin, but they control the game on the road against a credible P4 opponent. Indiana, on the other hand, hasn't played anybody. They played Old Dominion 1-13, and then they blew out two basically FCS schools,
yes.
Kennesaw State and then Indiana State. I think, you know, Cignetti is still a killer. We know that.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
But BLM is a really good coach, too. And I think Illinois has the best, or close to the best quarterback play in the league. So give me 6.5 points. I'm taking them.
Yeah, I like the points in this situation, too. This bothers me that we're picking all the same stuff. I really wanted to just go.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
But it's just, this is a tough one for me. Because I feel like that game with Duke was a lot closer. But they're, you know, they did get to go on the road. And they played, you know, a tough game. And showed that they could come through and allow the other team to make mistakes and totally capitalize on them. I don't think Indiana is going to make the same kind of mistakes that Duke was making, but Indiana hasn't been tested at all. And I think, yes, it's nice to start 3-0 and, you know, two blowout wins and one closer than it should have been. But I think there's something to be said for having some adversity and facing that. And Illinois has done it already. So I'm going to take them and the 6.5 points too.
Yeah. But I think that's going to be a great game.
I think it could be really good. All right. This one, I don't think it's going to be very good.
No.
We got
Washington Huskies
at
Washington State Cougars.
Yeah. So this is 4:30 p.m. on CBS. Washington traveling to Pullman to take on Washington State. Washington State is a 20.5-point home dog, which is just a sad thing to contemplate.
Because the Apple Cup has always been great.
Yeah. Well, except even when it was the Crapple Cup, at least both were at the same level. That was 0-12 Washington versus, I believe, 1-11 Washington State. Washington State is not in as dire straits as Oregon State. They still appear to have a pulse. They beat up on San Diego State at home, beat Idaho at home. They did get crushed at North Texas last weekend, 59-10. So they're reeling a little bit from that.
59-10.
Whereas Washington just got a bye week. They've had a bye week to prepare
for this
thing.
Not that we knew about that.
Not that we knew about it. And Washington's looked pretty good. I mean, solid, at least this year. I hate taking 20. I hate having Washington cover this one, but I see really two very dissimilar talent levels, so I got to go with the Huskies here.
Me too. I really would love to take the points, and but you can't get blown out by North Texas and then be like, oh, yeah, you'll keep it close against Washington. Like, I just – that's – my brain's not going to let that happen. So, can't do it. Sorry.
Yep.
Okay. Next up, we've got
– Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
And they're on the road at now number 25.
USC Trojans.
Do you remember all the people who told us that with all these Big Ten home games at West Coast schools, none of them are going to be at 8 o'clock? That's crazy because the Big Ten teams won't allow that. They won't allow their home their team's games to be played at 11 p.m. Eastern.
You know what time I'm going to get home Sunday morning? Like, yeah. It's going to be like 2:30.
I just want everyone to understand these decisions are not made by people. They're made by like actuarial tables and dollars and cents. And the reality is that the West Coast didn't move. It's still in a time zone that's coveted and a time slot that's coveted. And so there's going to be a steady diet of these 8 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. West Coast games, even against Big Ten opponents. Just get used to it. But this should have been known from the beginning that this was going to happen. Anyway, 8 p.m. on Fox, Michigan State 3-0, traveling to number 25, USC, also 3-0. USC is an 18.5-point home favorite over the Michigan State Spartans. Mm-hmm. Wow. Michigan State has played three games that were all, I would say, close and somewhat disorienting, but Aiden Chiles is playing a lot better this year.
He is.
Defensively, yeah, they're okay.
Not good.
Offensively, though, they're getting better decision-making from their quarterback.
Yes.
Jonathan Smith is a good coach. That's the only part here that's making me think plus 18.5 is the play.
Okay.
Is that he's a good coach. He can manage a game. He can probably manage them into a non-blowout. So I'm going to take Michigan State in the points. Ooh. I think USC will win by a comfortable margin. But I want to say it's like 31-17 or something like that.
All right.
Like, I think Michigan State will hold the ball, try to control the clock, and just make it a bit of a slog. But yeah, I've got USC winning by 2 touchdowns.
So this is the only one we're going to do different. I had it at 17.5. It's moved up. It started at 15.5. It's moved up to now 18.5. If we did the show on Wednesday, I think it would have been 17.5. So I think we should do that.
I don't think so.
Maybe just do 18.
I think we do 18.5.
Okay. Yeah. So watching Michigan State, like I said, that was a 10-point game against an FCS opponent in the fourth quarter, giving up a lot of yards. The defense has been leaky. The team is pretty banged up. Best receiver might be out. Best kickoff return guys out. There's a lot, you know, offensive linemen are out. It's tough. And USC is number one in the nation in sacks right now. That was a deficiency last year. They're actually getting after the quarterback and tackles for loss. And Michigan State is giving, I think, like 10 tackles for loss a game. They're giving up a lot of negative plays. USC's 2-0 covering at home. Didn't cover against Purdue on the road. I think they cover this one. They beat Purdue, which I think is, I'm guessing, might be better than Michigan State right now, potentially. And beat them by 16 on the road when they had to, you know, settle for like 5 field goal attempts. I think they'll finish more drives in this one. And yeah, I like them to cover this one fairly easy. All right, so we have one different one. So we got to wait till the very end to see if we which one's different. We also have super chat again.
Hell yeah.
Love it.
From Gil.
Hey, Gil. I'm late and bummed I missed the UCLA resurgence talk at the beginning of the pod.
Mm.
Well, you can go back and listen to it or watch
it. Take it all in.
Yeah. Sorry you're late, but no, we did a lot there. Okay,
yep.
What time is it? Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and do some questions. I have to do like a radio thing and a little over half an hour, so we'll try to get through all these. But back in a minute, everyone. Alrighty, we're back here on the podcast of champions. We're champions. No matter what people say, we're pretty champion-y. We have a voicemail, David.
Hit me.
First of all, we have a couple. Oh, crap, we have three.
Jeez.
I didn't realize that, but I put a new one in this morning. Shout out to Perk. We'll play his first. Got to meet him in Indianapolis. He came by. Very tall human being. I tweeted out the photo. Super nice guy.
You didn't ask him the height?
I didn't ask him the height, no.
Why not?
I don't know. There's a picture next to me. I'm 6'3", and he, like, towered over me.
So. Towered. Like, I responded to the picture with, oh, hey, Burke. And then, how fucking tall is he? Sorry, Griffin. But dude's, like, 6'8", 6'9".
I think he's in that range, yeah. And yeah. Did you know he was an Ohio State fan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just
He's the only reasonable one.
The other reason for one. All right, well, here's his voicemail.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. First off, Ryan, thank you for visiting the subpar state of Indiana. Hope you guys enjoyed the 3-hour rain delay and what seemed to be pretty easy USC win over Purdue. But with all of the news that happened, my question is for Dave. And I'm curious, Dave, to get your thoughts on, I guess, what was the difference with the UCLA donor network, and I guess what was the influence for Martin Jarmon to fire Deshaun Foster 15 games into his tenure? What was different this time than compared to the Chip Kelly situation in 2023? I know you said that there's unity in the fan base to want Chip Kelly to be gone, but I'm wondering, did they just want him gone but didn't want to pay the money for the buyout? And this time they came to Jarmon and said, we want Foster gone. Here's the money. Now you have no excuse. I'm just really curious to see if there was indeed anything that was different, what it was. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, definitely some more donor motivation. I think that was lacking to some extent during the Chip Kelly run-up. If you remember, I don't know, nobody who was super inside baseball with this crap remembers, but Casey Wasserman gave Chip Kelly a vote of confidence of his own in November of 23. So I think there was more donor motivation here. Now, I do know that vote of confidence was asked for by the UCLA administration, but the fact that he was willing to give it is, I think, notable. Donor motivation, and then the other piece is, I think, Martin Jarmond was motivated to do it out of a... If you're the head, if you're the guy who made the bad decision and you want to look decisive and look like you should maintain your role, what do you do at that point? You got to fire him because it's non-viable. So I think he was motivated because it was his hire and needed to get it done. I don't think he was as motivated with Chip because, again, I think he had a bad historical perspective of UCLA and thought people should be happy with this. The fact that they weren't happy should tell him everything he needs to know. I made this point earlier on my UCLA podcast, but just the job of an athletic department is fan first. I know it sounds ridiculous to say that, but it's the reality is that that's where the money comes from. The money comes from the fans.
It does.
It might come through a TV contract. It might come through donations. It might come through season ticket sales, but it comes from people. You cannot deny the reality that people are seeing and expect them to continue to give you money and interest and eyeballs and all those sorts of things. UCLA has operated as if fans are this like wayward byproduct of something else. And I think Martin, if I'm being charitable, is more athletes first, which is a nice thought and a nice idea. And I'm not saying that you should ever operate in anything like an unsafe manner for athletes or in anything where you're not accounting for their well-being. What I am saying is that that cannot be the priority of an athletic director. The athletic director's job is to make sure his programs remain viable. Like, fundamentally, first and foremost, viability. And the only way you do that is by getting fan buy-in. And at a certain level, getting fan hope. You have to have hope entering a season. You have to always have that
hope
cycle.
Is important.
You have to have that cycle of hope. And if you lose it for too many seasons in a row, you need to fire the coach. He spent a long time denying reality, which is whether he thought Chip Kelly was viable or not, did not matter. No one else did who was in the fan base. Which is why 30,000 people were showing up to the Rose Bowl. I mean, this is, you have to deny the reality in front of your face to continue to make those bad decisions. And that's what happened there. He made a good one here because I think he feels pressure.
Gotcha. All right. Next voicemail.
Hey, Ryan and Jeff. This is Chad from Encino, one of your three Spotify listeners. I took the count at the last meeting. It's just three of us. I've been a diehard UCLA fan since I can remember, and I really just have two questions about the current state of the program. The first one being, if this is just rock bottom, how many years is it going to take for us to dig back out realistically if, big if, all the correct changes have been made, i.e., firing people that need to be fired, hiring people that need to be hired. Let's say, miraculously, for the first time, UCLA makes all the correct decisions. But if they do, how many years should it take to dig us out of this hole? I mean, I'm looking at Cignetti, and he was able to turn Indiana around in 1 year. Could we see that same turnaround? And then finally, this one's mainly a question for David Woods. I think that's the Twitter handle.
Correct.
I don't have much else to do on Saturdays now. I'm not going to go to the Rose Bowl. I don't want to be obviously seen amongst my 20 other peers at the stadium. So what hobby do I pick up? Do I like bird watching or something? I'm in need of a new hobby at this point because I guess I'm not one of the true Bruins who's going to stick around. So if you guys give me some new hobbies to try out, that would be much appreciated. So thank you again, Jeff, and vacation, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Vacation, Jeff. Okay.
So I'll take those questions in reverse order. Hobbies to take up. It's interesting you mentioned bird watching. My college roommate, Benjamin, he is a bird watcher. He was as a young fellow. He could give you pointers on bird watching. What I do on Saturdays is a lot of youth softball. I am an assistant coach of my daughter's team.
Wow.
So I do that. It's a great way to avoid too much football. Now, is watching football my job? Some say so. Who knows?
I think it is.
But I avoid it as much as I possibly can. Now, as for the first part, your question was basically how quickly can this happen? And you're exactly right. It can happen in a year if all the right moves are made. There is no rebuild that takes forever now. Now, the thing is, to make a long-term viable program, I think there's a staging process. So first year, you can bring in a bunch of transfers. You don't want to build a program that way because it's hard to do on a yearly cyclical basis to replace a bunch of juniors and seniors with a bunch more juniors and seniors. It's just hard. UCLA, USC to an extent, but a lot of programs that have viable talent in their backyard can still build through high school and still count on maintaining a pretty good clip of retention from that group because people want to play in front of their families and it's harder for them to do that in other places. So you can still have a sustainably built program mostly from high school in these areas. So I think UCLA would want to do that, but that's going to take cycles. And so I think for the next two, assuming they hire a great guy and assuming they clean house in a few different areas of campus, assuming they do all the right things, a year, and then it'll be 2 or 3 years of transfer heavy, and then hopefully they will have sustained some high school recruiting by that point.
Gotcha. All right. One last voicemail.
Hey, Dave and Ryan. This is Richard from Eagle Rock. With USC playing Michigan State, I realize that we need more trophies in the Big Ten. You know, I know there's only like 700 of them, but I really think I got a good idea for a trophy for the Big Ten Michigan State game, you know, because the Spartans and the Trojans, you know, that goes down to the lore of the Trojan War. And I think what we need to do for this trophy, we need to have a big old wooden horse. And that horse should be, you know, it should be filled up with messages from the team that held it last. And it should be delivered to the locker room, after the game. But here's the part that needs to happen to it. This big, inconvenient horse needs to go to the loser of the USC Michigan State game.
Like,
you know, that way, you know, you guys want to create these new rivalries, just have it so that the equipment people hate the other team because they're like, ah, damn it, now we have to haul this thing out of here. So, anyways, Ryan and Dave, keep up the mediocre work. Thank you.
I love that idea.
That's awesome.
Just a huge, inconvenient, ugly trophy.
I think all messages from the other team.
Always going to the loser.
You have to display it. It's like you finish last in your fantasy football league and they give you some terrible trophy that you have to put on your mantle or something. It's like punishment. Yeah, like it's like a punishment.
Oh, I love that.
That's a good one.
All right. Where are we?
I think the first one is a text message from Corey in PA. I blame your late-ass podcast posting after week one for me forgetting to do the Survivor pool. Here's my Spotify review. The podcast doesn't suck because I've been listening for 6 years. It made me appreciate the whole Pac-12 just in time for its collapse. At this rate, I will appreciate the whole Big Ten before the collapse of college football. Corey and PA. P.S. Would every former Pac-12 team beat UCLA?
Probably not Oregon State.
Yeah. P.S.S. Isn't it P.P.S.?
I don't know, man.
USC is the opposite of a Trojan horse. David can explain. I don't know. I'm like limited time, so let's like get through these. Sorry.
All right. This is from Tom in the Cayman Islands. Superheroes. Hi, Randy and Douglas Metals. A few episodes back, there was some discussion on superhero movies. I think Doug may have been lamenting how many there were. Anyway, they got me thinking, what superhero villain best represents Big Ten teams? Here's what I've got. Oregon. Iron Man. Billionaire spends way too much money on outfits. Ohio State, Thanos. In addition to the fact that the entire roster can afford to buy very expensive bedazzled gloves, they just feel like the all-powerful program to beat now that Alabama has regressed. Michigan State, the Hulk. They're both green. That's all I've got. Wisconsin, Deadpool. I'm giving the Badgers this honor because they seem like a good fan base that doesn't take itself too seriously. In addition, I could completely see Ryan Reynolds devising a scene where Deadpool is bludgeoning villains to jump around while jumping on their genitals, I guess. Indiana, the Punisher, because Signetti kills. Love it. Mm-hmm. Rutgers, Dopinder? Oh, Dopinder. I don't know how to pronounce it. The guy who drives the taxi in the Deadpool movies, he's just kind of around and happy to be in the movie / conference. Sorry, resident Rutgers fan.
Ah, yes.
That's all I've got, and oddly, I'm drawing complete blanks for USC and UCLA. Thoughts on these? Any other program superhero combos come to mind?
I don't know. USC might be like a Batman kind of thing.
UCLA is like
resources and stuff.
Like Hawkeye, like not a real superhero. Just somebody you can shoot.
Okay. I like that.
Fight on, Tom and the Cayman Islands.
Cayman Islands, I love that.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, this is from Dustin. There's basically no point in discussing the current UCLA football season.
No, let me tell you more about the last 2 minutes of the first half.
Yes, we need more of that.
Joke.
Minutes I can't get my life back. The only things truly worth discussing are hot lists for new head coaches and athletic directors, and no retreads or alums without successful coordinator experience. Even though Moore is doing okay at UConn, that's a terrible idea, and I know some people will suggest Jerry Neuheisel. I will. Wait, go back and erase that before Martin Jarmon gets any ideas. David, please rank the following candidates. Tony White, Alex Golish, Glenn Schumann, Ryan Silverfield, Brian Hartline, Chris Hampton, and Jason Eck. Ryan, since UCLA's chances of going 0-12 are now pretty high, what do you think UCLA's conference record would be in the Mountain West? Okay.
All right. Ranking the candidates. Alex Golish is probably top of the list there for me. Let me see what actually Ryan Silverfield's doing at Memphis. Hang tight. Ryan Silverfield is the head coach at Memphis. He's pretty good. But Memphis is one of those tricky programs where pretty much everybody wins these days. At a fairly high clip, so I don't know. I would wonder why he hasn't been picked up by somebody else yet, because he's been there since 2019 now. I'd go Golish, Schumann, White, Eck, Silverfield, Hampton, Hartline.
All right. We have a potential. Not a good development in the chat. You will pay for that Rutgers comment.
Wow.
I think that's from our resident Rutgers fan.
That's not good. Somebody's going to pay.
He retaliates in ways that aren't good. Okay, as far as the Mountain West, I'm just going to look at the top because I assume UCLA is in Big Ten, Mountain West. Like, the top team in the, like, UNLV is the top team in the Mountain West. They're 3-0 right now. I'm assuming UCLA would beat UNLV. So I think they beat pretty much everyone in the Mountain West, right? Oh, wait. Did they they play them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think they could beat, like, San Jose State.
What about, like, a New Mexico?
New Mexico lost the game. They're 2-1, so you have a better chance against them.
You think so?
Oh, wait.
Hang on.
Did something happen?
I'm hearing reports.
Yeah.
They'd
probably beat like Air Force and Nevada and stuff.
I don't know who they'd beat at this point, honestly.
Yeah, that's a really tough one to get. But thank you for that one.
All right. Next one is from Matthew from Mountain View. UCLA 0-12. Hello, gents. Have we now officially entered Colorado 2022 territory where we're rooting for 0-12 because that would be funny and memorable? Yes. And Dave, would you maintain that position even if Foster were fired midseason, thus removing any actual positive consequences of losing so much? Absolutely. Also, it's really too bad that UCLA and Stanford don't play each other anymore. It would have been a hell of a game,
yes.
As in anyone who watched it voluntarily would go straight to hell. Oy. Matthew from Mountain View. Stanford would beat him by 4 touchdowns.
Stanford beat BC.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
UCLA is not terrible. UCLA is not a football team right now.
No. The actual resident Rutgers fan is in the chat. Destiny, I forgot. Okay. So he said could not agree more. So, yes, there's some trouble brewing. Okay. By the way, he's in the chat. Like, you're supposed to send me your address so I can send you that gift card. So
come on,
send it over there. Sometimes it's hard to be a Bruin. Oh, from the What's Bruin show. This is a pain of being a Bruins fan. Listen, they sent a link to their show. So this is from Jake. He vowed that they would cancel the show at 0-4. So I guess there's a lot on the line in Evanston in a couple of weeks.
We'll have to listen.
We'll have to check that out. So from the What's Bruins show, they do a great job over there. I gotta listen to the pain.
Yes.
Sorry, Jake, I haven't listened yet.
This is from Ice Cold 1906 on the Bro Board. Just for fun, can you do a Pac-12 roundup? Oregon sure looks like world beaters.
I know. Do I have that still? Yeah.
Pac-12 roundup.
We're not, because we're pressed for time.
We don't have a lot of time to do that, but we love. Usually, our resident Rutgers fan will do that for us for a little bit.
Yeah, but he's angry.
Yeah, that Stanford won though. Like, he should be a little happy.
Probably, but no.
No. Okay. This is from Alex in San Francisco. Hello, Dave and Ryan. Submitting a new question since my last email was before Foster was fired. Revisiting my question from 2 weeks ago, and now that Foster has been fired, I had asked about a fired Kalen DeBoer, who would have no one to bring with him in the transfer portal versus a sitting group of five or FCS coach who could bring 40 players or more with them, hoping for a Cignetti like year one. Given the state of the program and the dwindling fan base, how important is hope/success in year one, the coach with a roster really ready for transfer with them versus a proven coach who may have a rough year one, a DeBoer type with no access of immediate talent injection, to what happens next? Thanks, Alex in San Francisco.
I think either way, you should expect the new coach to bring in players. Because even if... So I don't think Kalen DeBoer should be the hire if he's fired. I don't think it's ever a good idea to hire a guy who was just fired, just from like a mental standpoint. I would be worried that they're not locked in. Not like that they're bad at coaching suddenly, but that like being fired is hard, man. It sucks. And, you know, take a break, take a year off, hire them after a year. But I wouldn't want to hire Kalen DeBoer, you know, if he gets fired by Alabama in October. You know what I mean?
Really?
No, I wouldn't.
I would think that'd be great.
I think he'd be burned out, dude. Oh. You were just in the pressure cooker for like a little under 2 years. And I don't know. Anyway, that's one where I would be a little cautious about doing that. I think going with a G5 sitting head coach who has a roster sitting, I think that's a good option. I think if you can target some P4 head coaches who have a roster, that would be even better. But I think whichever way you go, you want to have the funding in place that they can hit the transfer portal hard when they get to it anyway. And even if they can't build a roster from their own players that they bring over, there's thousands of guys in the portal every single year, so you would hope that they can build a roster from that. But I don't think it's not a foregone conclusion that a new head coach should be bad to start out with, even if they are not necessarily bringing over, you know, 30 of their own players.
All right. I think there's two text messages here. Is this one you? I think it's you.
Yes. Right. All right. This is Oxnard Steve. Good move today. Done with class, though I was able to get a hold of Martin Jarman's original draft before it got fully edited for the doctored up press release. We made a mistake, then got caught off guard, made a hasty decision, which was another mistake, and then regretted it, which put us all in an uncomfortable position. But now we can all start over again at a really inopportune time. But now, instead of hiring a lifelong Bruin, our head coach, we are going with a skipper who we know very little about and who arrived on campus just a few weeks ago. Isn't this why they call us Gutty Little Bruins? And then he followed up with, okay, I couldn't resist another. The castaways of Westwood made Gilligan walk the plank as their latest cast off and decided the skipper would be a better captain of the UCLA Minnow. How long did Gilligan Foster's tenure last? About as long as a 3-hour tour. Ah, okay. A real 3-hour tour. Oxnard Steve.
All right. Thanks, Oxnard. So no question there, but...
Love it.
We do have a naive question for Sith Lord Dave.
From Frank in Sacramento. A question from Frank in Sacramento.
I see a question mark at the end of this statement, which would make it a question,
We are now going to read the content and determine whether in fact it is a question.
Start off with a good word. Would the reason that Chip Kelly was not fired in November of 2023 have to do with the fact that UCLA would have had to pay a big buyout, whereas waiting 3 months and having him quit saved a lot of money?
If he took the word would off the front of this, it would not be a question.
Right. That's why I said that it was a good start. Putting would there like makes it like pretty much a question.
I mean, I'm sure it was a role. I'm sure it played a role.
But I think it's a, you know, And I know you've been very much of an advocate of, hey, they should have fired him a while back. And it's one of those things like, was it money? The whole thing, was that all money?
The right time to fire a head coach is always right now.
Yeah. By the way, real quick, since Dave didn't do his job, we did preview all the games. Let me do this real quick. On byes this week, we have
the Ohio State Buckeyes, Penn State Nittany Lions, Minnesota Golden Gophers, Northwestern Wildcats,
and mercifully,
UCLA Bruins.
Good job, Dave.
Beautiful.
That's right, right? I hope that's right.
I don't know. Who knows? Who cares?
Yeah.
All right, you doing this next one?
You used to do this stuff.
Are you the next one? Or me? No, it's me, isn't it?
That's you.
All right, this is from Paul/Webfoot. Comments in the Survivor Pool doc. For your consideration, the following are selected comments from the Survivor Pool doc, both those who picked UCLA and those few who were smart enough not to pick them, such as myself. Winners, 10,000 IQ play because UCLA is going to lose this one. Saving UCLA for my championship game pick. I am too smart to pick UCLA here. I know this game. They're going to lose. Fuck, I forgot to pick UCLA before that game started. Editor's note, congratulations on forgetting, Scooter. Losers. UCLA is going to fuck me, aren't they? Sorry, Griffin. UCLA can't lose to New Mexico, right? I already know that UCLA is going to screw this up. Feel like an idiot choosing UCLA. Excited to celebrate my Bruins' only win of the year this weekend. UCLA, 3 poop emojis. Sorry, Dave. I hope Martin Jarman's next hire is a better one. Thank you, Paul.
That's a great... oh, my God. Do I got to do this?
Oh, wow.
Okay. This is from Maximus. Decimus Mendius?
Meridius.
Meridius? I'm sorry. I need to make this bigger. This is small. Dear Ryan, what's left of Dave at this point, I'd like to welcome you to the annual disaster parade, otherwise known as UCLA football, where every week is like watching a toddler try to drive a Mack truck through a hurricane, and somehow, the AD is still asleep in the passenger seat with a pina colada. It took a listen to a team called the Lobo, yes, Lobo, which sounds like a discount costume at a convenience store, for the AD to finally wake up and say, oh yeah, we don't have a captain. And the good news is, well, congratulations, UCLA. You finally acknowledge that your football program has less leadership than a middle school cafeteria. The bad news, you still have nobody steering the ship. Nico looking like a lost tourist in Times Square. And the defense is a concept, a suggestion, like a post-it note that says, maybe tackle someone. Mr. Woods, I need your forensic Pulitzer level breakdown of Foster's tenure. The highs, if they exist, they're probably hiding in the witness protection program. The lows, the kind that make grown men scream. And the plays that make you wonder if UCLA coaches even know what direction the end zone is, or if they've been secretly hoping for the scoreboard explodes so we can stop asking questions. And while you're at it, solve the great cosmic riddle. Is UCLA actually in Los Angeles, or have we been unknowingly following a football program that exists in a parallel dimension where logic and competence were outlawed? Now for the solutions. As I was watching Monday Night Football, I noticed a crafty creature in the press box. Upon zooming in, I saw anguish and pain in his eyes, pain for the current state of UCLA football. It was a look of a man that knew only he could fix it. Only he could bring UCLA back to the glory days of 7-5. 7-5, David. Do you remember what that felt like? I know Ryan does. Only Charles Edward Kelly's can fix this mess. UCLA needs to stand on brand. In a world with apathetic AD and a president, only Chip could steer this ship back on track. And who cares if he doesn't like recruiting and crew? UCLA to the moon, baby, from Maximus. Oh, my God, that was a lot.
That was a lot.
I think I did okay on that one, though.
Yeah, that was good. I don't know if there was a real question in there.
I don't think there was any.
That was a beautiful email. Okay.
I need to make the font bigger because that was hard to read.
Yeah. All right. This is POC Dad Jokes. David, what are your best dad jokes? Ryan, you may also tell a joke even though you are childless. God, I don't have any good memorized. So a dad joke is not necessarily a joke itself. It's sort of a vibe.
Yes.
It's sort of like, what can I say in the most annoying way for my children? And so I do that obviously all the time in as annoying as possible ways. You know, it's just the classics, you know, like, Dad, I'm hungry. Nice to meet you, hungry. I'm Dad. You know?
Yeah.
Like, and if you don't do that, are you really a father? Like, if you don't just annoy the absolute shit out of your children at all times, are you really a dad? I don't think so.
Mm.
So I just make an effort, you know? A lot of people make efforts and like, oh, I'll take my kid to sports or I'll help them with their homework. I make an effort in trying to show them that, yes, grown-ups can be extremely annoying and they're not to be trusted at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's like a vibe.
Yeah, you're just doing, it's a vibe.
Just like making silly things and stuff.
Yeah.
All right, you're going to read the next one because
I'm
read out of this.
This is Calvin Money. Cal I. Money. In memoriam and four questions for the podcast of champions. Dear Ryan and David, permit me, if you will, to depart from the customary levity of conference realignment chatter and weekly prognostications. Today's correspondence must adapt a loftier register. Adopt a loftier register. Something approaching a eulogy, for we are convened, at least in spirit, to honor that which so recently carried promise, vitality, and continuity, only to be snatched from us in untimely fashion since your last colloquy. From time to time, a figure ascends beyond the mere trappings of leadership and comes instead to embody a cause. Such individuals inspire fervent loyalty, provoke strident opposition, and perhaps most significantly endow their community with an identity. When such a figure departs suddenly, it is not simply a resignation, it is a tremor that unsettles the entire edifice. Unsettles the entire edifice.
This is a rough one.
And when certain prominent voices, less adept at reconciling themselves to the manner of this change, are likewise ushered off the stage, one cannot help but suspect that matters transcend the neat official narratives we are offered. His words, too, have not been spared from controversy. They have been debated, derided, even mocked in some quarters, and yet can we, in the quiet of sober reflection, truly declare them misguided? One line in particular resounds all the more in his absence. I'm not worried about the marketing, because what marketing does, if you win games, you're marketed. Thus, I turn to you with an inquiry. How do you interpret UCLA's loss of Deshaun Foster? Is this merely the banal machinery of contemporary collegiate athletics, or does it betray a deeper dysfunction within the university's own administration? And what ought we to make of the murmurs that certain voices, Akaika Malloy, were shown the door for failing to demonstrate the requisite conformity? Last and most importantly, how will this impact future calumny payments? As at all memorials, I conclude with the only words that seem adequate. We may indeed march forward, but we must not forget. With utmost regard and scholarly sobriety, Calvin I. Money, PhD, Department of Mathematics, Predictive Modeling of Monetary and Team Dynamics in the NIL Era.
That's pretty good.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Nice. Love it. There's not really a question in there either, I guess.
I mean, there were, but they've been asked and answered.
There's a lot. Yeah. We got a couple of comments that I wanted to put up on the screen. Meg, Dave, where does a coaching search rank as far as UCLA fan excitement and engagement? It's got to be near the top, right?
It's the only thing that gets people juiced these days.
Yeah.
The only thing, and this is, I made this point a while ago, and I'll make it very briefly now because Ryan's got to go. But the only thing that UCLA fans have to look forward to is firing the head coach. That's the only thing that ever gets them juiced, because nothing good ever happens on the field anymore. But it is part of the hope cycle. Like, that hope cycle that athletic directors and athletic administrations need to consider is, sometimes we need to fire the coach because the fan base expects it, because the fan base needs the blood. And that's part of the gig. Like, it's part of the whole thing. You can't maintain mediocrity for 6 years like they did with Chip Kelly, because the fan base will turn to something else. It's gladiatorial combat. You need blood. And sometimes the blood is the blood of the head coach, and not in a real way. I'm not saying in a real way. Metaphorically, it's firing him. That is what does it. Is it, oh, yeah, I'm juiced again because they got rid of that guy who has haunted my dreams. It needs to happen, like, as a cycle. Unless you are sustaining at Alabama late rates, you need to be firing your coach with some alacrity.
All right. Also, Meg also put in, better job, Virginia Tech or UCLA? I mean,
in theory?
Yeah, in theory, it should be UCLA.
In theory, UCLA. In practice, I mean, UCLA is like an I don't even want to say where they are. I don't know where they are. In practice, they're like not even trying. So I don't know. Virginia Tech, obviously, but like in a just world, UCLA.
Yeah.
As Deshaun Foster put it, we're in LA.
That's true. Can you imagine how bad UCLA would have lost to New Mexico if practices were, you could have talked to a player watched them stretch?
Hard to know.
It could have been so much worse.
It could have been.
They've opened it up now, right? Like the...
More.
They're doing more. Dogs Life in Portland. Didn't UCLA pick Foster because of the athletic department was running in the red and they needed someone on the cheap? Do you feel like that's...
So, yes, to some extent, but there's always money in the banana stand. You can always make more money if you hire successfully. The idea that you need to make a budget hire for budget reasons is a reason you shouldn't continue to have your job.
Yeah.
Because you're not thinking about it. You're trying to cross a number off of your ledger and replace it with a smaller number. That's not how you build something. That's how you report stuff to your boss so you don't look as bad.
Yeah.
It's not what you want out of a guy who's supposed to be making executive decision making.
No, and I think this is, it's an institutional thing. I saw it happen at USC too. There were things that are like, well, this is the way we do it. And there's a lot of that. And you can't have Martin Jaumond going, well, that's just the way we do it. He has to go, look, this is, if we were going to be successful in football, hey, President, Chancellor, hey, you know, everyone, we have to all be on the same page here, and you have to push back on some of these old standing ways that schools did things. You know, the ones that had success right away, they adopted NIL, they did everything new. Like, you can't look at it, well, the only way we're going to be successful, the only thing we can do is hire a crappy coach. No, you got to get on the phone and talk to big boosters and be like, do you want us to go get Deshaun Foster? That's what we're going to do unless you give us some money, and then we're going to go get this guy. So I think you have to like push back on the status quo and the way this is the way we always did things. Like, you can't do it that way anymore. So if that was your reasoning, because it was the only guy we could afford, you're not like, there's not like, here's your pile of money and this is all you can spend. Like, you can always go get more. You can go knock on doors, make phone calls. Like, that's part of the AD's job is like, we have budget for that. We're in the deficit. We only have budget for this. We need this. So give me more money. Here's what we're going to do. And here's why you're going to invest in this and why it's going to be successful. And it's going to be worth it. But you can't just say, well, we can only spend $2 million on a coach and we're in the Big Ten and everyone else is spending five or 10 or whatever. So yeah, you just can't do that. All right. I think that's
it. Is that it?
Yes. Oh, we're like just in time. I got to like do my radio thing in a bit. Some Michigan radio, so it's like a Michigan State thing. But good stuff. Thank you, everyone, for hanging in with us. I know it's a couple days later. Was David this week Wednesday because of all the crazy stuff? Do you think?
Actually, it was Wednesdays will typically be just fine. It was a combination of things, but I couldn't find somebody to watch my kids, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know there's been a crazy week for you and for everyone else, but a lot of good games in the Big Ten this week, so check them out. You don't have to watch as many. There's not a lot of FCS games and all that kind of crap. There was a lot going on there. Our picks are doing pretty good. We're both above 500. Only one game separating us. So follow along. Do it with my bookie. Use promo code POC. And you can get a free $500 bet. Rejuvenate your bankroll. If you get that bet wrong, use POC code POC and you can get it back. All right. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.